Howdy.
Now that you're here, we can commence.
Welcome.
Oh, a little time like a press.
You're gonna have to check me though. I think this is where I left off. But obviously it was a week and a half ago, so I don't remember. I know we watched The Fire. Remember that.
Yep. Well, that was on the other page. All right, so obviously there's problems going on in Vietnam. It came as a complete shock to the president. The president, when he got word of it, felt like he was essentially being lied to, or he wasn't being told the whole truth. Because remember, he sent over fact-finding mission after fact-finding mission after fact-finding mission. And some of the people are saying it's a shit show. Some of the people saying it's fine. Everything's great. And then this happens, which hit the newspapers and the media on a global level. And he was never told that there's a Buddhist problem. That Diem the Catholic is suppressing the Buddhists. So, in order to get the truth, Kennedy does something that very few individuals have the ability to do. He chose one of his adversaries, his political opponents, Henry Cabot Lodge, and made him ambassador. Sent him over to Vietnam and said, "What is going on?" Within a month, Lodge reports back to the president, "We're not going to win anything. Any type of war with Diem in charge." And the regime pretty much proved him true. Because instead of trying to mend the situation with the Buddhists, the regime continues to suppress the largest religious group in the country. For example, on June 15th, there was an incident outside the Giao Loi Pagoda. The pagoda was the largest temple in Saigon. Early in the morning, a crowd of about 2,000 people surrounded the pagoda to go in and pray. But the police arrived and tried breaking up the crowd. Riots would erupt. The police start using tear gas, fire hoses, clubs, even gunshots. One protester is beaten to death, and a whole bunch of others are injured. Most of them young people. Soon, pamphlets start appearing on the streets of the capital. Not only criticizing Diem, but calling for regime change. And these pamphlets get put in the hands of the media, the Western press. So, through the wire, bam, 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 all of this information starts getting transmitted back to America, back to Europe, appearing in the newspapers that our quote-unquote ally is nothing but a tyrant. To silence the pamphlets, many of the leading monks in Vietnam start being arrested by the secret police and sent to prison. And they did it during the day. They didn't even bother doing it at night. People saw. People talked. People took pictures. Then, when crushing the Buddhists didn't work, the regime then starts basically going after the press. In a troubling account that was reported over here was an event lovingly referred to as the Double 7-Day Scuffle. It took place on July 7th. There was a group of American journalists covering the Buddhists engaged in a peaceful protest on the 9th anniversary of Diem's rise to power. American journalists would be confronted by members of the secret police. Peter Arnett of the AP, who was punched in the face by a cop. The assault only ended when David Halberstand, who happened to be over 6 feet tall, towering literally head and shoulders over the South Vietnamese police, began pushing the cops back to protect his buddy. But the police not only managed to get their hands on Arnett, they also arrested Arnett's photographer, Malcolm Brown. They're brought to the police station and they're questioned. And it was alleged that the police were going to press charges against the reporters because the police claimed they were the victims and the reporters were the aggressors. FYI, the only thing that saved them, Halberstand contacted the American embassy. And Lodge put in a call to New, basically saying, you will not press charges against American reporters.
What do you think would have happened if he didn't make that call?
They would have been arrested, and the story would have gotten back into the American press. And it would not have gone good. And there would have been people started, probably in America, protesting the president's desire to support Diem.
You think they would have been able to, like, get out of jail or whatever? Or you think they would have done?
They probably would have ended up going to jail. They would have done a sentence. Would it have been life? No, but it would have probably been a couple of months. Well, you put the fact that the regime is going after Buddhist monks, attacking religious sites, and attacking the press. And at this point, the ambassador, Henry Cabot Lodge, he's done. He fires a report to Kennedy. And I quote, they, as in Diem and Nu, are essentially medieval, oriental despotism of a classic family type, who understand few, if any, of the arts of popular government. He said they were interested in the physical security and survival against any threat whatsoever. They weren't just going to go to war against the communists. They were going to go to war against anyone who questioned their regime. Long story short, Lodge tells the president, time's up. And it would be this damning report that would convince Kennedy to move. Fast forward to August 1963. Lodge in the embassy receives a wire from the White House, giving him the green light to engage in an operation to eliminate Diem. Lodge immediately contacts CIA operative Lucien Conan. Being a CIA spook, Conan had made contacts in the ARVN officer corps. Conan's task? Find some general willing to overthrow the president and take power. 2 weeks later, Lodge replies to Kennedy, and I quote, "We are launched on a course from which there is no respectable turning back. The overthrow of the Diem regime." Kennedy replies, "You better not fail." Why? 1963, Bay of Pigs, Cuban Missile Crisis. 1963 is almost over, and you're getting towards 1964, a presidential election year. Kennedy wants to be reelected, and he knows if South Vietnam goes to shit, that's going to be one more black mark against him. Lodge replies, "We got this." Now, interestingly enough, Kennedy being Kennedy also wanted to give the regime a chance to engage in a course correction. So, on September 2nd, 1963, the president sits down with the leading reporter of the day, none other than Walter Cronkite, and they conduct an interview. The interview is broadcast on CBS. The interview itself is about 16 minutes long, but I'm pretty sure I clipped it. I did. Because after 12 minutes of conversation, South Vietnam comes up.
Come on, internets.
Clear, as Ambassador Lodge is now making it clear, that while we want to help,
perhaps with in personnel. I think it can. If it doesn't make those changes, I would think the chances of winning it would not be very good.
Well, hasn't every indication from Saigon been that President Tiam has no intention of changing his pattern?
If he doesn't change it, then of course that's his decision. He's been there 10 years. As I say, he has to carry this burden. He's been counted out on a number of occasions. Our best judgment is that he can't be successful on this basis. We hope that he comes to see that. But in the final analysis, it's the people and the government themselves who have to win or lose this struggle. All we can do is help. And we're making it very clear. But I don't agree with those who say we should withdraw. That'd be a great mistake. That'd be a great mistake. I know people don't like Americans to be engaged in this kind of an effort. 47 Americans have been killed in combat with the enemy. This is a very important struggle, even though it's far away. We took all this, made this effort to defend Europe. Now Europe is quite secure. We also have to participate. We might not like it in the defense of Asia. We're in a very desperate struggle against the communist system. And I don't want Asia to pass under the control of the Chinese. I think that would threaten the security, not right today, but in the 1970s, the late 60s, that would substantially increase our problem, increase the danger to India, 500 million people, and that would join with the rest of the communist bloc. They'd be that much nearer to us.
Mr. President, have you made an assessment as to what President de Gaulle was up to in his statement on Vietnam last week?
No, I guess it was an expression of his general view, but he doesn't have any forces there or any program economic assistance, so that, these expressions are welcome, but the burden is carried, as it usually is, by the United States and the people there. But I think anything General Gore says should be listened to, and we listen.
You don't think that this is another prod to get together with you to try to call off President de Gaulle from his kind of sniping us?
Well, I mean, President de Gaulle followed a policy of advancing the interests of France, and and he's a man of great stature. We're trying to advance the interests of the United States, and we think the interests of the United States are tied up with maintaining the balance of freedom in the world. What, of course, makes Americans somewhat impatient is that after carrying this load for 18 years, we're glad to get counsel. But we would like a little more assistance, real assistance. But we're going to need our responsibility anyway. It doesn't do us any good to say, well, why don't we all just go home and leave the world to those who are our enemies. General de Gaulle's not our enemy. He's our friend, and candid friend, and that's sometimes difficult, but he's not the object of our hostility.
Mr. President, the sending of Henry Cabot Lodge, after all, has been a political enemy of yours over the years, one point or another in your career, and his. Sending him up to Saigon might raise some speculation that perhaps you're trying to keep this from being a political issue in 1964.
No, I think National Guard wanted to go out to Saigon. If he were as careful as some politicians are, of course he wouldn't have wanted to go there. He would have maybe liked some very safe job. But he's energetic and he has strong feelings about the United States. And surprisingly, as it seemed, he put this ahead of his political career. Sometimes politicians do those things, Wallace. Thank you very much. And we're very fortunate to have him.
Thanks, sir.
Then it goes into outtakes. They talk about, because the camera keeps rolling, about how comfortable the chairs were and all the rest. They apologize for Breeze, but it's pretty funny.
So you heard it all there. Talked about Lodge's assessment. Talked about the fact that, there are other nations paying attention to what was going on, including France. Talked about the fact that the president is just basically trying to use the media, the press, to send a warning shot across Diem's bow. And by the way, if you have no idea how international politics play, this happens all the time. So when Biden was president, or Trump being president, or when Obama was president, sometimes they say things in the press that are meant to be warning shots, telling other regimes, don't push too far. So Kennedy, in Kennedy's style, is just trying. Never once does he say, we're plotting a coup against you. But he's just basically saying, look, there's time. There's time. Course correct. Do something. But does he listen? Well, Kennedy continues to send over fact-finding missions. In September, he sent not one but two missions over to South Vietnam. The first is hilarious, at least to me. He sends over Marine General Victor H. Krulak and a diplomat, Joseph A. Mendenhall. So they fly over, they spend 36 hours in Saigon, then they come back. Krulak reports to the president that the war is going well and it will be won in spite of the regime. Typical military general. Marine, we're going to win. Mendenhall, the diplomat, says in his report that the Vietnamese people are terrified of the regime. They are terrified of Nu's police state. And reports that Nu's got to go, or the war will not be won. Two guys flew on a plane together, were in the same spots, at the same moments, saw the same things. One says, everything's great, and the other says, it's all going to pot. Kennedy was furious. According to eyewitness accounts that were in the Oval Office, Kennedy reportedly even asked them, yelling them at their face, were you guys even in the same country? Frustrated, he sends another group. He sends Secretary of State McNamara back over, along with General Maxwell D. Taylor, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. This time, they're over there for 10 days. They meet with Lodge. They meet with ARVN leaders. They talk to people on the streets. They even talk to the American reporters that are over there. When they came back, unlike the previous mission, both of these men were on the same page. Both agreed that the situation was dire. Both men agreed that the war was going well and progress was continuing, but the regime is the problem. Their report also suggested that the Viet Cong would be defeated by the end of 1965. So with a little more training, a little more American weapons, that they were actually going to win. They were going to defeat the insurgency. So, what does Kennedy do? Kennedy would actually draft a plan to begin a drawdown of MAG advisors beginning on December 31st, 1963. Questions? Then it all goes to pot. In October 1963, the regime prepares to have a celebratory parade commemorating Diem's election as president back in 1955. The government spent weeks preparing for it. As the police and the soldiers march through the streets, Diem watches impassively as the troops march by the reviewing stand. But here's the catch. The image symbolized what was going on. Diem was up on a platform, surrounded by his security details, and the whole main plaza was evacuated of people. the people could watch the parade on the side streets, but not in the main plaza. That was only for Diem. Why? Well, you can't let the public too close to the president. But the problem is, this was false imagery. Yeah, you can have your troops parading through empty streets. But if there's no one there applauding, what's the point? You're supposed to be symbolizing that you are the leader of a country. And you don't even allow the people to participate? You don't even allow the people to come close to you? Are you actually the leader of the people? Or are you a tyrant? Well, throughout it all, U.S. intelligence began gathering intel on a plot that is being planned against Diem. Lodge gets wind of it, but Lodge also receives orders from the State Department that he's not to get involved. He's not to try to stop it. Involved in this is none other than CIA operative Lucin Conan. See, Conan had, after Lodge reached or touched base with them, started meeting with ARVN generals in trying to get a feel for whether or not they'd be willing to kind of coup Diem. And as it turns out, there was a group that were fed up with the president. This group was spearheaded by this man right here, General Duong Van Minh. Minh had been a hero and a supporter of the regime when it came to power. Bien was the general that led the troops that crushed that mafioso group, the Bien Xuin, in the Battle of Saigon, if you remember, back in 1955. It was Minh who also captured the leader of the Hoa Hoa and crushed that group in 1956. He was a George Washington type figure. The people loved him. He was a popular hero. Well, in 1958, he was actually ordered by Diem to come to the United States, and he actually studied at the U.S. Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. And it was while in America, when he got to read the American perspective of what was going on in Vietnam, when he had an epiphany. Realized that Diem had to go. Now, in 1960, when the paratroopers coup occurred, he was called by Diem to respond, but Minh decided to stay home. He called in sick. He wanted to see how it would play out. As a result, Diem was furious with him. But because he was so popular, he couldn't kick him out. So instead, he removed Minh from having contact with troops and promoted him. By the way, one of the weird things that you may observe in life is if you get a job in a company, sometimes it's the absolute morons and idiots that get promoted. And they get promoted just so that way they can be removed from whatever department they were in because they were screwing it up. Weird things happen. Well, Diem gets promoted. He becomes a military advisor of the president. But you know what his job was? His job was to sit at a desk and watch over the three main phones that had the lines into the presidential palace. He wasn't to answer the phones. His job was to watch the phones. Which made him furious. Fast forward to 1963. Fast forward to the repression of the Buddhists. And it was there that, according to reports made by Cohen, is where Min became radicalized. Min himself was not an overly religious Buddhist. But he saw the powers of government being used against the people. You're not killing the Viet Cong. You're not killing the insurgents. You're killing your own people. And at that point, he was ready to act. In September 1963, Cohen would introduce Min to Lodge. While he did not state directly to Lodge that there was going to be a coup, he did point out that there were a lot of soldiers in the military who were resentful over the actions of the police dealing with the Buddhists. When McNamara and Taylor came to country the following month, Lodge arranged for Min to meet with them. But again, Min didn't let the cat out of the bag. Min never said there was going to be a coup. But he pointed that the country was now at a tipping point. There was no coming back. The regime killed peaceful Buddhist monks. The regime arrested peaceful, pacifist Buddhist monks. He also stated that he was a little concerned that even if there was going to be a coup, the United States hasn't signaled whether or not they were going to support it or not. To which, apparently, General Taylor shared that the United States policy was not involvement. Meaning, we're not going to support it, but we're not going to stop it. And that was the green light. That was all Min needed to hear. Questions? Now, coincidentally, Diem and Nu also began hearing rumors about a supposed coup. And they also heard that the United States might actually be supporting the coup. Which essentially meant that their hold in power now could be disrupted. So what do? Well, they try to move against the coup to counter the coup with a counter coup. If that makes sense. What they decide to do is design a fake plot that's basically going to allow them to arrest all the generals. The deal was simple. There would be a two-stage event. Codename Bravo 1, Special Forces from the ARVN would actually assassinate American officials, maybe even Lodge. Then the special operatives would broadcast over the radio that they were part of a revolutionary group and they were going to declare that the government was over. So you had some of your special agents going in that direction, creating the fog of chaos. Well, simultaneously, Operation Bravo 2 involved Diem deploying loyal forces into Saigon, just like what had happened after the paratrooper revolt. So the loyal forces would come in and restore order. Then, once order was restored, all of the conspirators, all of the generals, would be labeled as being pro-communists. They would then be arrested and murdered. We're gonna wipe them all out. Yeah, that's the plan. And then, at the same time, they do the unthinkable. They actually reach out to Hanoi. Brother Nu met with Premier Pham Van Dong. Now, Nu was ordered by Diem not to make any promises about unification. But Nu was to listen to Hanoi's plan on how to help get the Americans out. So the regime was kind of going to do an enemy of my enemy kind of deal. And at the same time, Diem attempted to get Lodge out of the city, out of the way, by offering the ambassador a trip to Dalat. Now, Dalat is located in the central highlands of South Vietnam. It, even today, is gorgeous. This is a current picture. It was actually a resort town made by the French when Vietnam was a French colony. That's where all the French government agents and officers and officials went on vacation. They had French-styled housing, French-style. They brought in like flowers from France. They just made it like a scenic paradise. So, they would be allowed to fish, be allowed to hike, climb the mountains, swim in the waterfalls. Free trip, paid for by the regime. But before all of these could be put in motion, the regime ran out of time. The coup against the regime was launched on November 1st, 1963. The conspirators, the Min Group, chose November 1st because it's All Saints Day. A day of holy obligation for Catholics to get ready for November 2nd, All Souls Day. In Vietnam, all of the Catholics get the day off. They don't go to work, including all of the Catholic military officers. Now, the funny thing is, Diem and Nu had talked about launching their scheme also on November 1st. Why? Well, because there was less traffic on the streets. It would allow the loyal troops to move quicker. But as it turns out, Min and company knew this. Why? Well, Nu actually started sharing the plans with one of Min's buddies, not realizing that Min and company were moving against the regime. So, to block Diem's launching of the fake plot, on October 29th, Min drafts a false Viet Cong report. They claim that there was a big VC force gathering in the suburbs of Saigon planning to attack the city. Well, when Nu heard about this, he ordered all of the most loyal units to go on a wild goose chase to zip out in the countryside to crush the VC. Then, 2 days later, a group tapped by Min, three ARVN divisions, made up of Marines and paratroopers, assembled on the outside of the city. So, the loyal forces away from the city, but the conspirators' troops now are in the city. Learning from the mistake of the paratroopers, the rebels used armor. They used their mobile armored personnel carriers. They used their armored cars. They used their light tanks. And they began advancing towards the palace while blocking the streets. Now, the funny thing is, how do they keep the troops from saying anything? Well, Min and the conspirators, they actually told the soldiers a false story. They actually told them that what they were doing was crushing a revolt by the police. So even if there were soldiers in their ranks that were loyal to the regime, they didn't realize that they were going to participate in toppling the regime. But they did receive a weird order. Wear red scarves. Why? Well, this would make it clear who's part of their unit and who's not. Completely caught off guard, Min's troops race towards the center of the city. Well, the central police see these armored personnel carriers and tanks racing through the streets, and they call into Diem. But when Diem hears this, he thinks, oh, it's my fake plot. These are my fake soldiers. Everything's going to plan. So what do? They sit back in their palace, smoke cigarettes, have a couple of cocktails. No big deal. Well, while Diem and Nu are relaxing, the rebels begin seizing key infrastructure points. They seize the government interior building that has control of all of the communications in Saigon. They seize the national police headquarters and basically put all the cops under arrest. They seize the airport. They seize the air traffic control tower. and they deny any planes the right to take off. Everything goes on lockdown. Well, 15 minutes after the start of the coup, when the radios went off the air, Diamond knew something was up. So, what do? They attempt to call ARVN headquarters to figure out what's going on, because their fake plot did not involve knocking communications out. Under the fake plot, the radios were supposed to keep playing so that way no one would know what was going on. Well, when the president calls in the ARVN headquarters, he doesn't get to talk to any generals. He's only told no generals are available to take his call. Then, 3 hours later, the palace receives a phone call. And Diem and Nu are given an ultimatum by the conspirators. If they resigned immediately, both Diem and Nu would be taken into custody, but would be exiled. So they would be protected and just simply shipped over to like France or something. Get them out of the country. If they did not, then they'd start calling in airstrikes and they would bomb the palace. Learning from what happened with the paratroopers, the generals told Diem there would be no negotiation. There's only two answers, yes or no. Diem apparently did not reply. Well, at 4 o'clock, freaking out, Diem finally gets in hold of what he believed was his most trusted general, Tran Van Don. But unbeknownst to Diem, Don was an ally of Min. Don then tells the president, and I quote, "The time has come when the army must respond to the wishes of the people." Diem had failed in his leadership. Diem had failed to implement reforms that were good for the people. Diem begged for Don and Min to come to the palace so they should negotiate. But Don, again, remembering what happened in 1960 when Diem simply stalled, Don said, "Sorry, Mr. President, not this time." Then at 4:30 p.m., the radios were turned on, and a broadcast came out. A recording of Min was aired in Saigon. In it, General Min said that the tyranny of the regime was over, that the ARVN had freed the people, and he encouraged the people to join the revolution. He then drove into the city, where he was greeted by laughing people who bestowed upon him bouquets of flowers. He was a liberator. Diem also tried reaching out to Lodge. Lodge actually took the call, but offered no help. Well, Diem actually had the balls to say to Lodge, "Well, if you're not going to help me as my ambassador, you should resign." To which Lodge said, "Sorry."
I answer to the President of the United States.
And instead, he offered, I'll send an American car from the American embassy. You and your brothers can get in the car. We'll take you to the airport. We'll put you on a U.S. military plane, and we'll fly you anywhere in the world you want to go. But Diem refused. Instead, he held out in the palace. Now, why didn't they just blast their way in? Well, it's because Diem had spent millions and millions of dollars building up the defenses of the Jialong Palace. They had 6 feet thick defensive steel reinforced walls all around the perimeter. There were machine gun nests. They had anti-aircraft guns there. They also had about a dozen tanks on site. And there were bunkers and underground tunnels that allowed for men to move around the facility. But the rebels did open fire as promised. Artillery pounded the palace for 4 hours. And amazingly, despite what you would think would have destroyed the buildings, casualties were relatively light. Only 9 rebels were killed, 46 were wounded, but only 4 loyalist guards were killed, and 44 were wounded. But knowing that the end was at hand, Diem formally surrendered at 7 a.m. Now, Min wanted a photo op. Min's plan, Min and his co-conspirators would march into the palace, and Diem and Nu would, in a ceremony, transfer power that would be broadcast live on TV. Then, Diem and Nu would ask to be granted exile, which Min had full intentions of granting. But when Min showed up at the palace, Tian and Nu were gone. They went through all the rooms in the palace, and they couldn't find them. Why? Well, they snuck out through secret tunnels with a suitcase full of American dollars. Ironically, they, what?
I said that's cool.
Oh, and ironically, they were out before the first artillery gun fired. They had left late in the evening on the first. Oh yeah. Ironically, why did they think Diem was still in the palace? Well, Diem had installed a secret phone line that allowed him to call into the palace, and it would be automatically redirected to an outside line. So it made it seem like the call was coming from the palace. But they did get too far. Around 10 a.m., they were tracked down to a Catholic church a few blocks away from the palace. They did beg with the priest to give them sanctuary, but the priest refused. When word got out, 2 jeeps and an APC arrived on site. Both attempted to surrender, but were shot at point blank range in the head. Not much left of Diem's face is left, because when a bullet goes into the back of your skull, it makes the front go, and that's Brother Diem. And look at Min. Does he not look happy? like that, gone. But now what? Well, truth be told, the reaction to what took place was, mixed, to say the least. As it turns out, JFK was both shocked and saddened. Why? Well, he indirectly authorized the regime change that culminated in the assassinations of the leaders of another country. That's a huge precedent. Usually presidents and leaders of one country don't order the assassination of leaders of other countries. But yet Kennedy was all in. But he also started realizing, we didn't necessarily do it, but we didn't stop it. Which kind of means we're kind of now entangled in this. Much more than they were. Remember I said, just a month before, he got a report, and he was planning on drawing us down. Getting America out. Now what? Lodge was absolutely giddy. He reported that it was mission accomplished. In his cable, he actually ended it with this line, and I quote, "I believe the prospects of victory have much improved." And head of the CIA, General Harkins, he wasn't so giddy. His report basically focused on the devil that you don't know. I mean, I'm sure you all heard the expression. Is it better to fear the devil you know or the devil you don't? In his report, he said, and I quote, "I've seen no one with strength, the strength of character of Diem, at least in fighting communists. Certainly, there are not generals qualified to take over, in my opinion." Harkin strongly applies to the president that as bad as Diem was, it's only going to get worse. But now what do we do? What do? We engaged in regime change. Well, as it turned out, all of the policy wonks and foreign policy experts, they didn't know what was going to happen next. Because we're in a situation where we're doomed if we do and we're doomed if we don't. They're fighting the Cold War. They're terrified of the domino theory. If the Republic of Vietnam, South Vietnam, cannot stand up on its own, that domino will fall. Then what's next? But simultaneously, if this new regime doesn't work out, does this mean we're going to have to put American boys there? We got to put boots on the ground. And the more boots we put on the ground, that means the more likelihood of those flag-draped coppins coming home. And with a presidential year looming, is that going to help you win re-election? November 2nd, November 3rd, November 4th, November 5th, November 6th, November 7th, November 8th, November 9th, November 10th, all the way to November 22nd. There's nothing to suggest that the President of the United States had any intention of changing where we were at. In fact, on November 20th, he actually ordered his aide, Michael Forrestal, to organize an in-depth study of every possible option available. What happens if we stay? What happens if we leave? But we'll never know the outcome of that study because of what took place on November 22nd, 1963. In Dallas, the President of the United States was shot and killed while traveling through the city. Had Kennedy lived, I actually read four books on that deal with this what-if scenario. And the funny thing is every single author of each one of those books said different things, which makes it really clear to believe that nobody knows what would have happened. But if I had to guess, Kennedy would have continued the middle of the road path like he had done. In other words, we're going to give you a little bit, but at the same time, we're not going to be all in. Coincidentally, some of his advisors claimed posthumously that if Kennedy won the re-election, regardless of what was going on, he was going to get out of the country, that he was done. But there are others that say no. 2 days after his assassination, he had a meeting scheduled to possibly talking about increasing military aid to the new regime. And why do we not know? Because all Kennedy did was to study after study after study. But to be fair, he was hoping that someone would figure out a plan. But America was trending in the wrong direction. When he became president in 1961, there were 700 U.S. advisors in country. On November 22nd, 1963, there were 16,000. Not a lot, but the gradual increase. And as a result, the man who became president upon the death of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Lyndon Baines Johnson, he was stuck. We did the regime change, now we gotta stick it out. And ultimately, that would be the initial view of the new president of these here United States of America. And the screen goes black. Questions? All right, see you on Thursday.